Hi, I'm Lisa Kennedy, and you're listening to The Bra and the Brave. This podcast celebrates the creative and the courageous. I am fascinated by those who are talented, forward-thinking, and inquisitive. Sharing their stories, wisdom, and everything in between, The Bra and the Brave is about people and their passions. So on to today's episode.
Okay, we'll do.
This is very exciting. Sheridan Nicol, welcome to The Bra and the Brave.
And thank you very much for my invite, my wee cup of coffee.
You're very welcome. I've known you forever, but we've not worked together. But well, apart from many moons ago, we did a show. But I've always obviously been aware of your amazing work as creative director of Jazz Art College of Performing Arts. Your reputation precedes you, so I'm very excited that you're here, and I get to know more about you because I feel as if there's so much to know, because you've got this amazing career that's ongoing, but the things that I know you have achieved, and the people, the lives that you've touched. I mean, there's so many friends of mine that have come through Jazz Art and went on to do amazing things. So I'm going to take you way back, way back.
Okay.
Can you recall your earliest memory of just being taken by, whether it be dance or music or the arts in general, like something that made you go, that's for me?
Funny enough, it was standing at the side of the stage watching somebody work the old lights. Remember, they used to have the wheels with the different colours. And I was always more interested in that than I was about what was going on the stage.
Okay.
Unless it was me that was going on the stage. But I used to stand with my mum and watch the engineers working the sound and everything. And was amazed, you know, that you could just turn a wheel and then turn pink or blue. And I was mesmerised by the magic of, well, it's huge then. Now it's all in it. You can do it in a laptop.
Yeah, yeah. What age would you have been, like, when you were side of the stage with your mum?
Oh, three.
Wow. So your mum was in that world, and that was just...
She started teaching after the Second World War, so that's why it's the 80th year we're going into of the actual run of the school. Gosh. In Lanarkshire. So I don't... I think it might be the oldest established school in Scotland now. That
I would think so. That's amazing.
Because one of our... We've got a thing in the show next Sunday, and it's a granny, a mother and a child. And... The granny started at the school before I was born.
Wow.
And she's still my best friend. You know, we've been friends for all those years. So it's...
Gosh. So your mum was a dancer?
My mum was a dancer, yeah.
Okay.
She was the British tap champion. And she was a sunshine champion, like, without war years. She was born in 1927. And I think she won it first when she was 9 or 10. And then went back after the war.
Jeez, oh.
And won it again. Obviously, there were no dance comps during the war.
Yeah. And so, do you think it was just a given that you were always going to be involved in some way, shape, or form in performing arts?
Not particularly. I mean, my gran and grandpa, my granny played for the silent movies. She played piano.
Cool.
And she used to play for my mother's shows without music. I've still got, in fact, the 2A, like, legal size pieces of cardboard, mm-hmm. 1.5 chorus, this, the key of C, and she could play for a 2.5 hour show without a note.
No music. Jeez, oh. Just that innate natural talent.
And my grandpa was a miner, but they sang at the piano. Mm-hmm. And I've still got the piano up the back door, but I can remember them sing, having music in the house.
Music, yeah.
My father, on the other hand, was completely opposite. We just was into figures and the business. And
okay, right, interesting.
Completely opposite.
That's mad. Yeah. And so from that early age then, you were on the stage, you were dancing as part of your mum's school then?
Yeah, I remember being kept under her table with fire guard round it where I played. It's like a playpen.
Until
my gran picked me up or something.
That's amazing. Can you do that now?
You remember the old fire guards that had come
hemmed
in, and I was under her table.
Well, she was.
Or if my gran was playing, I was in there. And,
I love that. You're trying to get out, trying to go on that stage.
Funny. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so then you start dancing and performing, and you have this a natural innate talent then?
No, I don't think anybody's got a natural and innate. You know, they may have a feel for it, they may have a passion for it, they may have the body, but unless you've got the drive, there's nothing. I know more talented, naturally talented people that don't do it.
Yeah.
It's get, you have to have the passion to do it. And but I was like a greyhound out the starts like that. Right, wouldn't work. That's me.
Yeah. So you've always been a grafter.
I love my work. When everybody gets all arty or precious and then there's going, and I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm sorry, I'm just getting up for my work.
Nice.
You need to get up at 4 a.m. and be on set with a smile or a grunt. You know, just depending. Oh God, what kind of time's this?
Yeah, because it's relentless, like running your own college, like jazz art, and I get, oh God, how it all have developed over the years, but that's an immense amount of work. And I know you've got people who work with you, and you know, it takes a village, but you're the head of the school, you know, it's everything lands on you, it's a lot. And then you'll have your own work, I guess, outside the jazz art. Yeah,
I must admit, I'm touching your wooden table here. I didn't think after lockdown I would get as much work as I am just now.
Well, okay.
I thought the revolution, the technical revolution would, a lot of things would disappear. But what's happening is that there's a new focus on performance and recording and streaming. But when people go out, they want to go and see something they know.
Yes.
And I think from a musical theatre point of view, there's at least another 3 or 4 years there before people get fed up looking at the old shows reworked. Which is quite nice.
Yeah, of course. I think we all had that fear, like, obviously during COVID it was horrendous. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's horrendous, obviously, people who were affected by COVID. But aside from that, as a freelancer, as someone who runs her own business, it was terrifying. Like, and to think that, you know, yes, I'm not working just now, and I might never work again. Horrible.
Sure you've found this.
Yes, I mean, I've been mobbed. Just, I mean, I'm like, so lucky.
But even, like, there's been a huge turnover of people.
Yes.
And personally, I think it's good for the youth of today who are coming out and going, oh, we can't get a job. The job opportunities for young, focused performers that work at their craft are huge.
Yeah. And so in terms of your career, like, so you were a dancer first.
I started off as a dancer.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a fluke, really. I was going to go to university and do computing.
Right.
And maths.
Okay. Because you were at school in Motherwell, eh?
No, Lark Hall Academy.
I didn't know that. I thought you were from, right, okay, cool.
From,
right.
Still live there. Yeah.
Is that right? Obviously, because you've always had this, the school in Motherwell, I just assumed.
My mum said to me, why it was Motherwell. She said, you say you want to teach, go and prove it yourself. You're not coming in and just sitting at my classes. And she made me go out and do it myself. She helped me, don't get me wrong, but she made me build it up.
Great.
Myself and didn't just say, oh, come in
and hand it to me.
Where were we at?
Lark Hall Academy, right, going to do computing.
Right, well, and then, because of my mum's connections, there was a lady then called Mae Moxon who used to put dancers everywhere. I was got an 8-week summer season in Perth Theatre.
Yay.
And at the end of that, before I went to university, I went to London, and it was an ex-pupil of my mum's who worked at the BBC, and her husband was the head of light entertainment, lighting director. And he turned around and said, there's auditions today over at Acton at the rehearsal studios. You should just go. So I got a pass for the auditions and went in and got the job.
Wow.
And I didn't go to university.
You're like, no,
I said, well, I just thought that doesn't happen very often. No. And literally, having read here, I was replacing somebody in the group that had read for here, so the costume colours suited me. I was the same height.
Wow.
I didn't have the same accent, so I had to, for this, I had to change.
What was it?
There were loads of different things. There were, it was all the variety shows that you used to have, and they had groups of different dancers, like the second generation, the young generation, the Gojos. Mm-hmm. I worked with Jo Cook in the Gojos. I think she did Top of the Pops at the time.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, well, and I did a summer season with her the following year. In Blackpool, 22 weeks with Mike Yarwood, 6 nights a week, 2 shows a night, and it was mobbed at the ABC Theatre.
Jeez,
Basil Brush and Mike Yarwood, so I can bark in any language.
That's amazing.
I mean, when you think back of the actual employment and the amount of people that went to the theatre then.
Yeah.
And then we did Sunday concerts. I was up for everything. I was just, I'll do the Sunday
I'll
concert.
I'll do it, I'll be there.
And then where people like Cilla Black came, and their support would be somebody like the newfound talent that was at Fleetwood, who were Cannon and Ball.
Wow.
Were doing that, they were getting their break into Delphont McIntosh's, well, Delphont at that time, yes. Blue Grade, the bigger theatres, Freddie Starr, Danny LaRue, all in the Grumbleweeds, all in Blackpool at the same time.
And you were just lapping it up, just loving it.
I mean, it was a great social life because every night there was something on.
Yeah.
There was.
So you're not even like in your 20s yet, but if you're just like.
I was only 17.
Wow.
I was
to perform like do that. It's massive, like to have that confidence as I well. Was, to be like, oh, that's where I'm going.
Yeah. But I mean, when I was in London, I did stay with a friend, one of my mum's ex-pupils that was married to the guy.
Yes,
That was the head of
it. That's the lifestyle in it. You've just got to make it work. Like.
And my next door neighbour was Johnny Stewart. He was the producer of Top of the Pops.
Wow.
So that they all lived in Chiswick in the same wee enclave. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah. And from then, I mean, you've been all over the world working, performing.
I brought my 18th birthday in Spain. I was,
did you know?
Yeah, I got a special license to go out and work at Tito's for a fabulous guy called Victor Upshaw, American guy, who did the Crazy Horse in Paris and the Casino de la Ban Beirut.
Gosh. And what would you say was your kind of favourite style of dance? Like, what was your...
I love jazz.
Yeah.
Jazz. I loved American style jazz. I was in America at 19. So working.
Really?
Uh huh.
So how did you end up there?
Oh, that is a long story.
Go on, we've got time. Come on, Sheridan. I want you to know.
What happened was I was in a show in London that closed, and the director said, if you're ever in America, get in touch. Yeah. So, as it happened, I finished a job and I got a royalty of £500, £523, I think it was, which was quite a lot of money. And I went, I'm going to New York. And I can remember my mum's face going, oh, for God's sake, where's she waiting now? Can you not just come home and shut your dad up for 2 minutes, 2 days? And I said, no, there's deals, I'm going. And I went over and I was away for 3 months. And covered for somebody in the show. Mm-hmm. And this is how small the theatre world is. I auditioned for Fosse when he was doing Pippin in London. Now,
just blew my brain away.
He was a very sarcastic, dry man. Let's say dry. I burst out laughing. He said something and I burst out laughing. And his face. And he went, can anybody here do any acrobatics? And I'm going, hand up in the corner like that, like a five-year-old. And I went up into the corner, knelt down on my knees, spat in my hands, and proceeded to do front chest rolls across the stage. It was the HM in Haymarket. And fell off the last one and nearly landed in the orchestra pit. Oh, and I went, oh. And he went, where are you from? And I went, I'm from Glasgow. He said, the only dancer I've ever known from Glasgow was Ian Gary. I went, he was my babysitter. He's from Lark Hall as well. And that's just because he had done Big Spence Sweet Charity in Broadway, and he was in Star, he was in Hello Dolly, and he was with Strotherhill and Lark Hall. No, but he didn't. He was my babysitter. He went to my mum, and he babysat for me.
Gosh.
To pay for his classes.
Jesus.
That's
mad.
That's how small.
Not many people can say the auditions for Fosse.
I just loved it. I just loved it. I mean, the attention to detail was phenomenal.
So New York became a regular.
Yeah, I went to the Ailey School there, and did a certificate, and there was a long link through. It was a guy called Jose Mayer that was the jazz teacher there at that time, and then there was somebody that taught Lester Horton technique, and then was Miss Forsyth, who was the head of Horton, and they were just. You walked into their class and it was like a religious experience. They stood like that and you could see the calm and the strength go through their body for their big toe right out the top of their brain, and the weight correction just by standing there. And they'd come up and point just you like that as a correction. And you could feel your whole it was like a spiritual experience to be taught by masters of their craft, like that. Good teachers here,
of course.
But they were like the ones that were there at the start of Ailey had this insight of where it came from, and it was just wonderful.
Well, you mentioning earlier on about where it comes from and that passion, like there's some stuff that, like you say, can't be taught, but then there's a lot of just that drive to want to be better and learn. And I'm guessing you're still learning.
Oh God, every day, every day.
But what would be the point, really? I think you just get a buy if you're not learning anymore.
I say to my students, I was watching, there's a new thing out in New York, and I was watching that. They went, how did you find out about that? And I said, I read. I said, I don't go on TikTok. I read.
Yeah.
So go into trade newspapers and you'll find out what's happening. I said, go to see a play, A Pie and a Pint.
Yes.
Go and see new writing that's relevant to you. Go and see new work and see where your society's going if you want to get into it, rather than try copying somebody else. Create your own niche.
Yeah. And in terms of the teaching for you then, have you always taught as alongside performing, or was there a definite moment of, I'm not dancing anymore, I'm moving into choreography?
Well, what happened was, as you know, Scotland's a small place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate that at 22, I was offered my first choreographic commission.
Okay.
And I decided then, again, overhearing conversations, if you're in it and it's got your name on it, chances are you're at the front and you can't see what's happening behind you. And if you're not in it, it looks like a hole where you're supposed to be. And there's not many people put their name to something without having the ego to be in it at the front. So I made a conscious decision then that when it came to Scotland as a small market, that I wouldn't dance.
Okay.
Unless it was television or one-off, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time there was, I mean, I did telly, I did the circuit up here and stuff. But that's where that came from.
Okay.
But I kept working down south.
Yes.
And then in Europe, and but only in the summer, because there was a huge change. If you think back to the middle, well, you won't think because you weren't here. But you,
I don't know.
You know, into the late 70s and early 80s, there was a whole disco thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Transformed what was happening on the stage. You know, there was the embracing of African dance, freestyle, roller disco. There was a complete change from the technical. There was a natural energy from a lot of young performers. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of them get injured because unless you've got the technical backup to take care of your body, it's a double edged sword.
Flinging your body about.
Yeah.
No, no, but why it's doing that?
Yeah.
I know the amount of young people I've kind of worked with on schools projects, not in a dance school or setting, but actual. Their high school, and you see the potential, but they're not doing ballet or they're not doing jazz, and I'm like, get yourself to gym because you can see that natural talent, and they're desperate to do it, but I'm like, you need that grounding, you need to do the ballet, you need to do the jazz, like,
and you need to make your body equal, and not just have one leg that kicks and one leg that doesn't, or you're sitting into the lower back all the time, and it does catch up with you.
Defying time,
I doubt it.
And so was your mum still teaching at that?
Yeah, my mum taught up until the week before she died.
Oh my word.
She was at her classes on the Saturday, went to the hospital on the Monday, and was dead the following Thursday.
Gosh. Just our life dedicated to
my father had died 6 months earlier. Okay. And I think she thought it was a bit of depression, but she had cancer. It was quite traumatic.
I can't even imagine. I'm so sorry.
It was an interesting year of how to survive when the pillars of your life just disappear.
Wow. That's the thing about your life runs alongside this career, and I know it well because the dedication that is required to running your own business, being a freelancer in the arts, like sometimes it's all consuming, but you are a person and you have a life sometimes.
And like anybody else, luckily with my mum, my parents understood because of my mum's background, and my father was in retail.
Okay.
And he'd shops, and he understood what it was to have to get up my Saturday morning and switch on.
Just get the job done.
Yeah. And, you know, anti-social hours, delivering at night.
Yeah, because the attitude, and I'm sure it still is a thing, that could be, oh, that's a Mickey Mouse job, or you don't know where your next wage packets come from. Well, obviously, you've not struggled for work, but that there can be that, you know, the uncertainty of working in the arts. And there is still, obviously, and rejection. Any parent, purely out of care, or just not understanding that industry, could have been like, go to university and do a computing degree.
My father was distraught that I didn't go to university.
Really?
He was absolutely distraught. He was the kind that used to make me sit and read a Ready Reckoner, so I knew percentages.
Wow.
And I have to say, dealing with some agents, it did come in handy. Thanks, Dad. And I thought you said it was plus VAT. I said, well, you take 25% off. That should only be $22.50 with the VAT on that. And
flies on you.
Well, this wasn't it. I thanked him later in life. He used to make me say he was measuring for a carpet. How many square yards will I need for this room? It's that, and how much, and what's the best way to cut the pattern and fit it in and stuff. And it used to be.
That's when my brain switches off and somebody gets me to do mental math. He's a calculator.
And he'd give me accounts and say, right, there's a page. Add it up to within 10% so you can look at a job. He taught me it. He wasn't like that. He taught me how to do it.
Yeah. What a skill. That's important stuff, I guess, especially running your own business, like you say. And so the birth of jazz art, when was that?
Jazz art started as a project. It was the first jazz project that the Arts Council of Great Britain funded in 1994.
Gosh.
Yeah. So what happened was we were between Liverpool and Glasgow funded us.
Right.
They gave us partial funding, and we had a big jazz expo in 96 at the City Halls.
Mm-hmm.
And we rehearsed every month in Maryhill.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was, instead of everybody getting funding to go to America, I brought people in. So I brought from London, or, you know, Michael Owen, Susie Taylor, Dolly Henry, mm-hmm. Colin Sinclair. They're all over the place now, still working.
Mm-hmm.
But I brought different people yes. to Glasgow.
Brilliant.
And
opportunity for young people.
Yeah, and we had about 40, 40 associates at that time.
Okay.
All of whom have done really well.
Yes.
You know, like some have gone by the wayside, but a lot of them, Emily Jane Boyle, Matthew Malthouse, Rod Buchanan, who's now a guru of fitness. He went to Ailey. Laura Greer, that teaches locally.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie Williams. If I saw a lineup of them,
they
were all. Lindsay Slammon was one of them at that time.
Yeah.
Local, and Lorraine.
Because Lindsay went to Ailey with you.
She went over. Yeah, it was her and Lorraine mm-hmm. from Allenton.
Because she still Lorraine talks Dougal. About it to this day.
Ailey and Steps and Broadway.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I made them get the subway themselves.
She didn't tell me that.
We actually had this wonderful flat that overlooked yes. the Chrysler Building.
I mean,
there was just enough for the three of us to sort of squeeze on the balcony.
Gosh.
Over in Third Avenue.
What adventures.
Yeah, it was great.
And the fact, like, you're mentioning all those names. You'll not even know how many people you've taught and how many people have come through the school. All these young people that have went on to have careers, like, they're all your babies, if you like, you know, all these people that you've collected and you've influenced their life and given them the opportunity, and it's amazing.
But what I believe, and some people think it's cold, I like them to go and flourish.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to go away and see the world and
yeah.
flourish and find something new that, you know, like,
yeah,
from and not a lot.
This is not the be all and end all.
Scotland.
Aye,
there's
sure.
a big world out there
yeah.
that
well,
you
you've
can.
You've seen it. You know what it. You know.
You can find out an awful lot more by going and mixing with other cultures
yes.
and actually finding out what makes their movement tick.
Yes.
Where it
That's
comes
so
from.
It's so refreshing to hear that, because over the years, I've had the attitude of, oh, you don't go anywhere else and just go here, and I'm like. But then when they go out into the real world and they're expected to work with different choreographers who work completely differently, and they've only ever went to the one dance teacher, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't think that's healthy.
No, I think it's very unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a fear of relearning.
Yes.
Because
you say, oh, but they'll get bad habits. I'm like, well, you shouldn't be going to MD that's teaching you bad habits. Like, a good dance teacher is a good dance teacher.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and you need to find out for yourself as well what your thing is, certain people have niches, but then other people will be so diverse and be able
yeah.
to do different styles. And I'm so glad you said that, because that's how I feel about it. I'm like, go learn all the stuff
and
try it.
If you're training
yes
always with a view to being within a square mile, you're not going to have much of a career.
No, that's
you need to get out and love life and have an adventure.
I mean, the thing is about Scotland, like, I'm enthused, but there's lots happening here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talking to people in the podcast, there's amazing stuff happening here, and I'm glad there is. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's also right to be like, oh, everyone's in London. I want there to be opportunities here too, but also, I think, like you say, go and have an adventure. Go and see the world. Go and meet new people. Why would you not want that for somebody?
Yeah, and bring it back.
Yes.
Bring back freshness.
Yes.
Don't regurgitate old,
mm-hmm. yeah.
old history.
Yes. And that's the thing about you as well. You'll have students that then come back to teach for you, do guest spots or whatever, and that's great
yeah.
for the current students that are in the school, like in the college, you know.
They also need to have some kind of role model to say, Oh, it is possible.
Yes. Yeah, because when you're just a wee person from Motherwell, like, not necessarily, you like, the world doesn't feel like your oyster.
I say, there's no such thing as a wee person from Motherwell. There's just a small mind from Motherwell.
That's right. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
just
it.
Get out and...
Yeah. But that attitude is correct, and I think instilling that in young people, like, anything's possible.
Yeah.
If you want it enough, you know, you have to, like you were saying earlier on, you have to work for it, you have to have the drive, the passion. Do you find that part easy to teach?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Because you've got it, you've always had it, that drive.
Well, yeah, I hope so. No, I don't find it easy to teach. I don't... When there's certain people walk on a stage and everybody looks at them, nobody can teach that. I don't care what school you go to. They can teach you all the tricks of how to get noticed. They can teach you how to accent an angle, how to bring in your audience without looking at them. They can teach you that. But nobody can teach somebody to be looked at by people that don't know them, unless that's coming from within. That's a self-awareness of control and taking status when they walk on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful when it happens.
Yeah, it's a feeling.
You walk harness. On. There's one girl of ours who's doing very well at present, who did that. She had to walk across the back of the stage one year, I think it was her HND year in a number, and all she did was walk off the back of the stage, and she said one word, and the whole of that 30 seconds that she walked across, nobody looked at anybody else on the stage, and they were all giving it what for at the front. One of the students said, "That's no fair, everybody's looking at her," and I said, "Work harder, dear." Just like, you shouldn't have been, if you had noticed her behind you, you weren't focusing on the right thing. And
it was so funny being side of stage at Go Dance recently, and you were on stage and you were calling the dance, one of your dancers, so you were doing that thing that I do where it was just like random noises and da 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 da, da. And he turned to me and he was like, "It's weird that I know what that means." And I said, "Do you know what's even weirder? I know what that means and I don't even know the dance." It was that, just that language, that thing that we do.
You've got an empty stage and you've got singers, actors, dancers, whatever the performers are there, and the technical backup's not quite ready for you, you don't wait till it's ready unless it's an issue. You get the spacing done.
Yeah, totally. But it was amazing to you. I couldn't even see you. I could only hear you. And I was just like, yeah, just that thing that you do, you just keep it going. Camera, it was just like, let's rehearse. Like, and it was just his career reaction, like, "I know what that means." And I was like, "So do I." It's like a whole other language that nobody else understands.
A 1DD.
And in terms of your teaching style and your approach, has that changed over the years, or have you always approached like teaching students the same? Have you just got your way, do you think, the Sheridan way?
I don't know, some people say that. I dislike selling dance steps.
Okay, say more.
I like people to understand what their body's doing. You can go onto YouTube and you only need to look at TikTok.
Yeah.
Within a day of something, there's 5 million people copying it. Mm. That one of those 5 million maybe do something a wee bit different with it. Mm. I like kids developing and understanding where their body's going, mm-hmm. and what any issues they have, like when their bodies are changing.
Of course.
It's not just
the finished product, what it looks like. It's not just that for you.
As I say, I think being able to walk on a stage and have somebody look at you without having to do 32 high kicks and 3 back somersaults.
Yeah.
Bring your audience onto the stage with you.
Yeah.
I've always felt that. Watch, stand at the side of the stage, and I used to always stand and watch Tops of the Bill. And I said, how did they get there? Because they're doing exactly the same as somebody, same gags that somebody would be doing 3 days earlier.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the same. So what makes that?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's the edge that's, especially with comedy?
Yeah. I know, I was at the Glasgow Comedy Festival on Saturday, and like that, when I came away, I was like, there wasn't loads of gags as such. It was just more about audience kind of interaction and reacting to his audience. It was Craig Hill.
Oh, he's funny.
Oh my God, he was amazing. I was like, what an art form, like just being able to draw everybody. And it was just that, being able to hold an audience and make them part of the show and make them all, everybody feel that they were part of it, but none of it looked rehearsed. I mean,
it's a huge art there.
Phenomenal. And in terms of like, so we've spoke heavily about dance, but really it's more broad than that, because it's musical theatre.
Musical theatre and a lot of variety, television variety.
And and the singing, so you sang as well then?
Yeah, for my sins, they heard me. Voice like a foghorn.
Sure you have.
Yeah. You just need to hear me shout, move!
Well, it's good for that. It's good projection.
Let's say, I had very good projection.
And fast forward to this year, and you're just gearing up for your show, which is like next week as we speak.
Yeah, and Sunday we're at the Theatre Royal, and to launch our 80th year,
that's
really.
Incredible.
And also, we're for 2024, our trustees have 24 scholarships.
Oh, wow.
For Scottish students.
Gosh, right, okay.
Because there was a trust fund.
Okay.
Which we can tap into.
That's phenomenal.
So anybody out there looking to go to train full time.
Wow. That's incredible.
That's just one of those, really a gift of, it was an inheritance that has sat, and this is the right time to use it.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
So, whether it's musical theatre or dance.
Yeah.
For commercial theatre.
Wow, that's incredible. And you're still, as well as doing jazz art, you're still working.
Yeah,
choreographing, overseeing, directing things.
Yeah, more line director now in television.
Wow.
And I work with a team that go here, there, and everywhere. And it's a very long story. A young French Canadian man who started off as a runner. And he's now, he does all the drones, you know, those footage and worldwide.
Right.
And we're working on an AI thing, which I think is quite it is very interesting, which is being used for education.
Right, okay.
That's why I was over in Hong Kong.
Yeah, because you mentioned that in terms of dance, yeah.
So it was to do with dance. It's very difficult to explain education and how the body moves. And I can say that I think dancing will be one of the last things to get copied by AI.
Thank goodness.
Purely because the formula of the body's all different. Everybody's got different legs. You can't, an equation in each the equation, but every person in a lineup will have a different measurement from their hip to their knee. And while they can scan it and do it, it doesn't always look.
I mean, I think AI is amazing, but I don't want it to replicate
I think you're going to see it replicate a lot of educational needs.
Great. I mean, all for education.
Yeah.
I like being in the room seeing actual humans.
But who is it? Is it Wayne McGregor that's doing something with AI just now?
Right.
He's working with a company and AI. I think it's Wayne McGregor.
Right. Fascinating stuff. How cool for you? I'm going to Hong Kong to work on this AI project.
It was great. Arrived in the 1st of January. I was going into Dubai at the Bells.
Oh, aye. And so you strike me as somebody who's a yes person.
Well, I always ask pertinent questions at the beginning and get all the nonsense out the way. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to do something, you have to commit fully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not half.
You can't say, I might do this. If there's a problem, say it there and then. Just like, I'm having a wee problem. There's a tendency now for people to feel as if they've failed if they say they don't fully understand even if there's a problem. Aye. Just go, look, is this right? Something you can feel when there's something not hanging quite right.
Yeah.
That's still not right, is it? No. And have that relationship with people so that the end product is better than it could be if you hadn't asked the question.
So true. You're right, there is a fear of failure. Uh-huh. And I think some of that is to do with online being like people being perfect. Online. And everyone's perfect, and you're like, well, no, nothing is perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Mm-mm.
But I think, and I feel for young people as well, with the social media stuff and online and just this pressure to be perfect in inverted commas, and like, it doesn't exist.
And they all need to conform to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've got an opinion that's slightly different, it's World War III.
It's horrible.
Excuse me. All she said was she doesn't agree with one thing you've said.
It's allowed. That's allowed.
That's called a friendship.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, the world would be boring if we're all the same.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And working with young people, for you over the years, you'll have seen shifts and trends and all this, but at the end of the day, just young people are just young people, eh?
Yeah. What I do notice is they think they're adults at 9 and 10. It used to be you got maybe that's them in third year.
Right.
So and then it went to second year.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's P6 and P7. They're
what says it's mobile phones and all the rest of it, Anna.
Yeah. I have to say, it does worry me how it's changing the whole human body. And also their hands. Like if you're teaching ballet or jazz hands, they can't stretch because they've contracted their thumbs.
Oh my gosh,
it is affecting the human body. And I know parents will think they're doing £1,000, and then there's once it'll be, that's just an iPhone 14.
Oh,
right. And I think mine's a 7. And yeah, she's not getting that one. Will not do that. It's not got that filter. It takes too long to edit it.
Wow.
I mean,
I mean, I'm not a parent, but I can imagine the pressure that's not even to do with mobile phones. Anything like the pressure of all my pals are doing it. I mean, I'm sure I was the same with my mum and dad. Like, all my pals are going down the street. You know, when they were all allowed to go down to Motherwell to the shops, and I wasn't. You know, and there's that fine line, and working with young people. I think I come from another aspect because young people, they confide in you because you're no their mum, you're no a teacher at the school.
Yeah.
So you've got that different relationship where you can be like, well, your mum and dad think this, or, you know, but it must be tricky to navigate that. But like you're saying, like working with young people, you're just trying to like show them that there's a whole world out there and a whole other set of opinions, and you can be whoever you want to be. You don't need to conform, you don't need to do the same as, you don't need to be a sheep. Difficult, it's tricky.
It is quite.
I was thinking about you standing at stage door and your girls were going out for their dinner,
mm-hmm.
and just you speaking to them, it was really lovely. Like, you were just like, girls, like, watch yourselves and zip up, put a jacket and zip up your jacket and watch. There's any dodgy people hanging about, and it was just that nice moment of
Chucky Hall Street.
But, do you know what I mean? Like, because 10 minutes before I'd seen you on stage and it was business. Like, mm-hmm. We've only got a certain amount of time, and that is quite pressured because you've only got that 40 minutes or whatever it is. And then to see that other side of you, not that I didn't think there was that side of you, but it was just lovely to see it. Like, at the end of the day, these young people are in your care. And that's important too, not just the dance.
And I mean, a lot of the parents come to me and say, could you have a wee word with her about that?
Oh, really?
But not a lot, but, you know, like, just if they're having a...
That trust that's there.
What's she been like about this, or what's he been like? And
yeah, because then maybe not... And they're not going to open up, or they're going to be different in class than they are at home.
Yep.
A lot of the time.
Peer pressure.
Oh,
joy up and joys, eh?
I know, totally.
It's a, the two of us sitting here basking in the sun.
I know, it's beautiful today. I know, it really is. It's absolutely stunning. This might, hopefully this is more of what's to come.
It said it was going to be snow next week.
I better not be. Oh,
I
actually,
better
not.
I hate. So do I. I don't
even... Can I get about? I'm like, I need to be able to get about.
I really do think people that go skiing, and I know a lot, I really think what a waste of money that is.
I agree. I've never been skiing, never planned to.
I tried it once and I just, the tears were running down. I hate it.
I'm thinking because I broke something. I'm like, I can't afford to break a bone.
But then they put me in a sledge. And I got down and I didn't even know how to stop it. I was absolutely hopeless.
And talking about hobbies or pastimes or stuff that you do in your spare time, do you have spare time? Do you? What do you do when you have downtime?
What do I do? I go out and drink champagne. Oh, I love it.
That's just Sheridan, if you had said any sentence, I was hoping you were going to say that. That's amazing.
I have friends I've had my entire life.
Yes.
And on occasions we meet up. I usually meet up with my good friend Sandra once a week when she's not jet setting. She's into traveling and just going for dinner, and she's got a lovely life.
Sounds it.
And we've been known to hold up the bar at the Straven Hotel a few times.
Nice.
Because our friend Sheila used to own the Straven Hotel.
Oh, okay. The Straven Hotel's lovely.
And our daughter's now one of the managers up there. Right. I'm not quite bar manager or events manager. So we tend to go in there, park the cars, and just have a couple of bottles of champagne and
I like.
There's a few wee bars I go to in Glasgow when I'm working.
What a life.
You've got to love your life.
And do you?
Yeah, I do, except when it's snowing.
Keep the sunshine going.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've had an amazing life up to now, and you're a curious person, which I really admire. Like somebody who just wants to learn and try things and go places and then all the while instilling that knowledge and experience in the
I love different cultures. I love going into a company where nobody speaks any English, and you have to be understood there, or in a work situation.
Yeah.
At Christmas, English was the third language. There was French, because it was a French-Canadian company.
Yes.
There was Mandarin, because we were in Hong Kong, and they were all speaking Mandarin Chinese. And then there was a kind of smattering of English. Well, I can speak a bit of French, but some of the things I come out with caused a lot of hilarity.
Unintentional.
I think that means something different with the accent there.
Sorry about that.
The cameramen were like, you could see their shoulders heaving. It was funny. Okay. Oh, dear God, yeah.
And you're a confident person?
Not particularly. Once I'm in there, I'm fine. Once I got over the threshold, I've got to go over the threshold,
So, what makes you go in the first place if you're worried or nervous?
Curiosity.
Curiosity.
Curiosity and the fact that I might learn something. I can see that we're talking about nice times, but I've done a lot of completely awful jobs.
Okay, yeah.
And anybody that says they haven't's telling a lie.
Oh, 100%.
When you're working at first and you're out there, some of the jobs you got offered in Smile.
Changed in broom cupboards, dancing on a postage stamp.
Not even so much. It was more the television stuff.
Really?
Some of the stuff I did in Spanish television was comedy. They had the dance of the week. Somebody sent me this, and it was filmed up in, I think, Cala San Vicente in Mallorca, and then Puerto Palencia. And they had, during the summer, they had the dance of the week that they wanted people to do in the clubs.
Right.
And we had things like the Funky Penguin with black and white flared trousers.
Like, what is my life? How did I end up?
Churning. And just...
that I'm pretty sure that's not appearing in next week's show.
No. Well, actually, there's a bit that we do in the Wonka part where it goes dee 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 dee, and I went, oh, and that's what I was thinking of, the Funky Penguin.
Funky Penguin. And like, I've trained my whole life for this. Paid the bill, didn't it?
It was very well paid. But the Funky Penguin was one of the things I went, I see if I never have to do anything in my life. Because we couldn't actually do it for laughing. We're four girls and four boys. I'm sure penguins would faint if they had to see it. But that's life.
It's all just goes in the pot, didn't it?
Yeah.
Please tell me you're going to write a book.
Well, people have said that, and I've actually, there's a couple of people phoned me about statements about folk over the years. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say everybody that I knew that was allegedly difficult to work with, I got on great with them.
All right, so this is people phoning you for that.
When things happen, they're like... Well, I never really found them like that. And I've always found, and I say this to my students, please remember if you're in company and somebody's talking about somebody and it goes in the wrong direction, you smile nicely and say, do you think so? I've never found them like that. And walk away.
Yeah.
Walk away quickly. I said, because before, even if you're there and don't open your mouth, you're associated with the nonsense.
Yeah, that is nonsense. That's right.
And
you take people as you find them. Like.
Yep.
You know, and I try to lead with kindness, do you know what I mean? And just take everybody as you find them, you know, and people are bringing their own stuff with them, their baggage. You don't know what's going on in people's lives. So, if you come across somebody that's grumpy or whatever, you're like, maybe that's just today.
Yeah. Some of the people like Stanley Baxter was wonderful because he wanted perfection around him. I loved working with him. Mm-hmm. You'd go, there's something wrong over there. And I went, yes, he was in the wrong place. I could feel, he had a feel for the entirety of what was round him, as did Ricky Fulton. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they could...
Scott's greats here.
And then if you can back Jack Mulroy, God, he was the funniest man I've ever met. And walk on stage and people just loved him. He just went like that, hello China's, and 1,000 people would just give him applause. He just had that thing we were talking. You walk on the stage and you're a star. And it was the ones that were saying, they're very difficult. I didn't find them difficult. Mm. Their name was at the top of the poster and everybody else was there to make the best show possible.
And that's what it is, isn't it? That's the goal. It's just we're all here for the same. The common goal is to make this show together, this collective thing that it's never going to happen again, this moment. So make it the best it can be.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you were to think about your career thus far, is there one defining moment that you're like you always go back to and you're like, that was a turning point or that was like a real highlight or just like, it could be even in the simplest of in that rehearsal room that day, I just knew something.
Yes. I think the first one was when I got the half hour call when I was working on Broadway. Wow. And I went down to the side of the stage and was sick. I was standing at the half hour call like that, going ready to go on. And I was myself, 19 years of age, in New York like that. And I was physically sick in a bucket.
Wow.
And they went, you okay? I said, yes, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And the other one was, this is a Sheridan story. I used to catch a lift in the back of Park's buses when they were going down to London. Empty before the deregularization had begun down and I'd get dropped off.
Okay.
I arrived in London for an audition at the Prince of Wales Theatre and I was there first, standing outside, and this man in a hat and coat came in and said, oh, and I said, yes, I said, come down overnight from Glasgow, and I've just walked down from Houston, you know, from Houston, it was like the Bell Cell speaker, you know, and I've just walked down from Houston, and I'm going to audition, and it was actually for Joe Cook. I'm going to audition for Bernard Delfont, and he said, oh, well, I'm opening up this morning, come in, would you like a cup of tea? So this gentleman made me a cup of tea, and he said, now, you can wait there till MD comes in. I've got to go through here and do something. At the end of the audition, I got the job in Blackpool and went down, and the man that had let me in and made my tea was Bernard Delfont. And he went, oh, we meet again. I went,
that's mad.
17 years of age. Wow. Going, oh, he made me my tea.
It was funny because
I'd been down to audition for Torquay, and then they put me to Blackpool. It was one of those huge cattle call auditions. Mm-hmm. Then there were 400 girls there for, I mean, there were a lot of jobs going. Mm-hmm. But and I was so naive that I didn't actually realise. I thought it was a caretaker in his winter coat.
I love that.
Cashmere winged
one. I love it. You got a piece of MD's door.
Oh, he always spoke to me. If he
Lovely.
Met me, hello Sheridan, how are you doing? And he sent me, when I got the Kings, he sent me a wee memo, because one of the grade, there was somebody in the show,
right.
One, and there was a Sheridan. I go, oh. And he sent a wee note to say, lovely, congratulations on your next stage.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
That's great. And I guess you'll be doing that for your students now, these people in amazing shows all over the world.
Well, yeah, it's quite nice when you go and see, you've got, what's been up lately? Oh, Jesus Christ Superstar, Mia was on that. There's another... Who's involved? Oh, Rachel Oates, local girl. Mm-hmm. She's just away. No, we were at her do last Saturday in New Stevenson, and that's her away to London for her rehearsals for the world tour of Mamma Mia.
Wow.
And she's understudying one of the leads.
Great.
So it's, you know, you just got to keep working.
You'll not, I can't imagine you're going
to
stop.
No. If I did, I'd just go to the south of Spain and
drink champagne.
I don't know about that. I think it would probably be rum and a bit of tequila.
No plans for the south of Spain just yet, though?
Well, I've gone there for 40 years. There's a beach I've gone to for 40 years near Cape Trafalgar. And it's quite interesting. There's different people meet up from time to time. We all go at different times. I commute. It's about an hour and 15 from Seville on the Pay Road.
Right.
But it's literally right down at Cape Trafalgar, 10 miles of beach.
Oh, wow.
Nothing higher than one story. Mm-hmm. Why I've not bought is there's no urbanisation plan, because it was all farmland. So one of those. But I've been at their first communions, their weddings, their family, funerals.
Yeah,
just,
of course.
They're like, it's a hostel.
Yeah.
8-room hostel, and it's just wonderful.
So that's your home from home.
Home from home. Mm. When I get there into my terrace, that's right on the seafront.
Bliss.
Sand dunes.
You need that time.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get away last year, and I'm feeling it now. I think I need to be physically removed from the country to switch off.
Yeah.
Because if I'm here and I'm off, I'm not really.
No, you end up doing
checking
something.
Emails and you're doing, planning the next show or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important to take time.
And I also like going a cruise.
Yes.
Because when everybody gets off the boat, I stay on myself. I can sit in the side that's not in the port, mm-hmm, and just look out at the sea.
Yes. It's a great way of seeing the world, isn't it? And just meeting new people as well. Like,
I'm not into that. Getting a tender onto a beach and then 3 hours on a bus. I'm going, I can go outside my house and go for 3 hours and be in Oban for free. A tender queuing up from 6 a.m, 3 hours there, 3 hours back to see a church.
Put on a show, I'll sit here, my glass of champagne.
Just sit and watch the world go by and read my book.
Loving it. Well, I wish more of that for you, Sheridan, as well as all the showbiz and the lights and All the adventures. Yeah, it's nice to have a balance.
Yes, it is nice to switch off.
Of course, it's important to replenish that energy that you've got for your work. You need that. This has been an absolute joy.
Thank you. We'll do it again sometime.
I'm sure you've. There's a million other stories that we've not covered, so you'll need to come back on.
Yeah, I will do. That's the first 5 years you've covered.
There we go.
It's another 45 to go.
Oh my God, that's how you need it. I mean, somebody needs to commission a documentary for sure.
Actually, somebody did say that you should document your life and the changes that there are in dance training.
Of course.
And performing arts training.
Yes.
And the ratio of people who train who work.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people doing it, but not many people actually
getting over that first hurdle. Well, I do have to ask you one more question because it's called the Braw and the Brave, you see.
Right.
So I always ask, what is your favourite Scots word or phrase?
Oh my God. I've got loads out of it. My mum and dad used to say, love KPTF.
Love KPTF.
And it was about 12 before I realised it meant Keith Punk Totally Fart.
What is that?
I don't know. They used to write it. Keith Punk Totally Fart.
Totally,
a jobby.
What have I heard that?
My goodness.
A totally.
You need a wee totally? Yeah. Sorry.
Gold. Podcast gold. Oh my God. So they used to say, I love you.
Yes, it can.
So it must mean like, I love you despite all the other.
I don't know, but that's, they used to sign that.
Amazing.
I still find in the old Christmas stuff, you know, like cards with their names on it from KPTF.
Oh my God, I love that. That's so cute. You're getting the Hall of Fame with that. That's unheard of. 4 amazing words. Yeah. Well, on that note, this has definitely not been Keith. This has been amazing.
Thank you. Been a pump at all in a fart.
It hasn't. It's been a joy. Thank you so much for your time and energy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Braw and the Brave, a podcast about people and their passions. Join us next time for more insight and inspiration from my wonderful guests. Bye for now.